like to call to order, this is a budget working session of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee. As a budget working session, we take no votes that affect the board. It's purely for discussion and exploration of budget issues. Before we start on the budget working session, I just wanted to comment, this is the first time, I guess, we've gotten together since the inauguration. And we've gotten kudos from, I think, just about everybody for the fantastic planning that went into the work that Metro did for the inauguration, for the service that was operated, for the many, many people who spent incredible numbers of hours planning it, putting it together, and actually implementing a level of service that probably nobody else in the United States and perhaps in the world could do. The idea of bringing 1.5 million people from all sorts of different places to one central location and then returning them to those places is somewhat incredible, and it's a major feat for a transit agency. So I want to thank the general manager and all of the staff for the excellent job that they did. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And also ask you whether at this point you have any idea what it actually cost us, what kind of revenues we got, and what kinds of costs we incurred in providing this high level of service for the entire weekend.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. First, I'd like to say I'd like to thank all of the Metro employees, the janitors, station managers, operators, security operations personnel, administrative personnel, and yourself for volunteering to assist as a volunteer on the inaugural day. It was an agency-wide effort, and Metro again demonstrated why it has a reputation of being a good system, and it demonstrated that truly it is America's system by carrying people from all over the country and all over the world. Having said that, for the inauguration, the 4 days, including the day of the inauguration, our expenses are approximately $5.4 million, total expenses. During those days on the Metro Rail system, we collected approximately $3.1 million, which is $2.5 million higher than what we normally collect on, during those four-day periods. We've not been able to calculate all the revenue in the Metro bus system yet, but we're still, so this inauguration still cost us a significant amount, which we hope to recover. But having said that, that's our job, to provide the services, and we did it.
Well, let me just double-check the numbers you just gave. The $5.4 million is the total cost or the cost above what we normally would have spent during that time period?
No, that's the above. That's the four, it's above the normal cost.
Okay, so at this point, we're roughly $3 million behind, not including the bus revenues, whatever they make,
yes,
which probably will not make a very large dent in that. So, okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, may I make a comment?
Yes, sure.
Thank you. I too would like to commend all the WMATA employees, the management, the employees. Everyone did a yeoman's job that day. I rode down to the inauguration myself. I left from the New Carrollton station and got off at Capitol South, and I got to watch the way everyone was treated. And being a native New Yorker, and I had a house full of native New Yorkers who are used to the largest subway system in the United States, who came to the second largest system in the United States, who all rode the system with me and watched the way everyone was treated. I mean, we thought you did a phenomenal job, phenomenal, all the employees, and that has to be said publicly. It was, it just was as smooth as it could possibly be, given the massive crowds, and the people at Capitol South were phenomenal. They did a yeoman's job. They were very humorous. They diffused any kind of situation, kept the crowd, kept everybody moving, all the Metro Police. Everybody did a yeoman's job, so I wanted to commend everyone on that as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Giancola.
Yeah, I do have a question on your numbers, but before I ask the question, I certainly want to add my congratulations to the entire Metro organization for their stalwart performance. I know a lot of people who use the system that were down in the mall. I did not go to the mall that day. I had a party at my house, so that was the way I celebrated. But that being said, even some of the worst curmudgeons made a comment to me, boy, I wish it was like this on every day. So, I mean, So that, you know, kind of like a backhanded congratulatory note, but still nonetheless accepted, and I thank him for his use of the Metro. But a great job by all, and certainly one to be very proud of. Now, back to my question. Have we requested the reimbursement for the funds as yet, and to whom?
Yes, actually, we've participated in an effort that was being coordinated by the Washington, by the district last Monday, and we are actually submitting our paperwork as a coordinated effort to the federal government for reimbursement.
Thank you.
Ms. Hutchins?
I wanted to join the comments regarding the performance of the system. And I would put it in the framework that, you know, first impressions are really the ones that last longest. And many comments were given as to what the expectations would be. And so I think people were somewhat tentative, but they were determined to get down to the mall, and they were determined to use the system. And I went down, and I was amazed that the comments were that for many people riding from my end, this was a first experience for them. And they got there, and they enjoyed it, and they found it more than bearable. They got the expectations that they wanted, and that was the ability to get a good service as an alternative in getting into the district for the inauguration. And you're right about the station managers and all the folks. I stopped by to say hello to everybody, and they were busy and very engaging with the public. And the tolerance level that I think we've generated in a system that I think is challenged and challenged every day, hopefully will serve us well as we try and go through, one, this process that we're starting, but the long-term understanding that there is a need for alternative transportation systems. They need to be able to be delivered in an efficient way. And if you can only support us, I think the riders will come along with us.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Follow up on his points. It's curious that we've come to a point in our culture where alternative transportation means not being behind the wheel of a car, so that walking is now an alternative transportation, although we've been doing it for hundreds of thousands of years. But what I think the real lesson of last week is, not beyond the obvious performance of this agency, which is all to be proud of, is that, you know, we turned a 2-square-mile area, what's the size of the mall area, to one of the biggest cities in the country for several hours. Put aside these, some people have been saying that, of course, but we had a pretty good experiment for one day, and that demonstrated it, what we were able to do, not only because our rail system performed so well, but because of all the other things that complemented that made that possible, including bus services. And I heard from a number of people who used our services and said they went down to places like Shirlington in my county, and I got heard from several people there, and you know, it was easy, and within 10 minutes a bus came, and you know, they were over in there, and it was easy, and they found it easy getting back. Now, some people went at times when the state troopers had decided to close the bridges, that became a little more complicated. But at the times it was working, you were able to move large numbers of people very quickly because, of course, the bridges weren't clogged because of all those individual cars, and so we were able to move. So I think there's a lot of lessons there. Hopefully the region will be able to build upon planning for our future transportation in the region.
Having ramped up to an incredibly high level of service for a period of 4 days, we're now faced with a budget for next year that may involve a series of service reductions, which is something that none of us really wants to deal with, because our whole objective here is mobility, trying to move people. And any time we have to reduce any level of service, we're running against the basic objectives of this organization. So one of the things that we would like to do in this working session, and let me again emphasize, this is a working session with no votes, it's a less formal thing than a normal committee meeting, is start to understand, at least today, some of the costs that are assumed for the budget. We will also take a look at the revenues assumed for the budget, and all of those things will help us to try to decide how much service we may or may not need to reduce. So if I may turn it over to you, Mr. General Manager.
Thank you. As mentioned before, we did come off of a week of accomplishments, and we've come off of a year, again, of ridership increases here at WMATA and throughout the United States. It's with a great deal of difficulty that, you know, we are bringing forth a budget that looks at reductions. And as we go through this process, and as we look at all of our expenses over the next weeks and months, we will look for every dime and dollar that we can to minimize any impact to services, as well as look at any revenue options that we have to increase revenues. Having said that, I'd like to turn this over to the Chief Financial Officer, Carol Kissel, who will go through some of the details of the expense assumptions for the FY10 budget.
Thank you. As the chairman stated, this is not a less formal venue, so I will go through this presentation, and I would ask questions to stop me at any time. We can dive into the detail and address the questions as they come versus doing that at the end of the presentation. I think that might be more productive for everybody. Let me just take everyone a step back. At the last meeting on January 8th, the general manager presented a challenging FY2010 budget, which reflected the worsening economy and projected a baseline operating expense budget of almost $1.5 billion, which clearly represented an operating gap, expense gap of about $159 million. That was in the January 8th presentation. The continued increase of uncontrollable costs, primarily labor contracts that we are committed to, as well as pension and health benefits, as well as energy, increasing energy costs, are driving those costs. This has actually, as a result, we've actually put together some actions this year, as you know, we've communicated, in order to manage the budget that we have for next year. Today, I'll represent more specifically some of those assumptions, as well as actions that we have taken and intend to take in order to close that gap of $159 million down to a more sustainable level. The expenses that we're going to address here are under the management, are under the general manager's purview, and will result in what we are calling non-service cuts, administrative cuts that we can take that are non-service related. The service cuts we are assessing and will bring forward at the February 12th FAO committee meeting. So these are our non-service related cuts.
Ms. Kissel, as you start, one of the numbers you just used was $159 million.
Yes.
Can you clarify for us as you go through this when you're talking cost changes and when you're talking subsidy, is that a subsidy number?
That $159 million is the change from the baseline budget that we had represented on January 8th to what we now see as a proposed budget.
Is that
it's expense.
It's expense. Thank you.
It's expense number, not a subsidy number.
It's not a subsidy number. That's correct. And we'll clarify that as we go through.
Please
the
do.
I will. So as I said, the economic crisis that we're having, we have labor commitments that we are contractually committed to honor. As a result, this year we have taken some management actions, one being the discretionary budget reductions that we've taken in three categories of expense, primarily materials and supplies, and also in professional and technical areas. And we've also implemented hiring freezes for this year. Currently now, if we need to do critical hires, they're presented to the general manager, and those are assessed on a one-by-one basis. We have also eliminated non-personnel expenses and overhead departments, and as a result, reduced overhead staffing.
Can I stop you for a second, just
yes.
So we don't misinterpret that.
Mm-hmm.
You're reducing the administrative budget and overhead staffing. You're not going to eliminate it completely, right?
No, we're reducing. That's correct.
And same thing on the next one.
That's correct.
We may reduce bus and rail service, we're not going to eliminate it.
No, in terms of the pending action, that is to be brought to the board in the subsequent meetings. That's correct.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What would be an example of a discretionary budget?
Discretionary budget overtime, well, unscheduled overtime, which we, management, can manage. Materials and supplies would be discretionary, where we can control some of those expenses, travel, things like that, conferences, training. We can also, to some extent, control our professional and technical consultants that we bring in. To the extent we bring them in, they're not contract-related, we can reduce some of the scope of work for those contracts. And those, actually, we've implemented this year, and as a result, we anticipate coming under budget this year in the amount that we've communicated to the board of about $9 or $10 million, because of the controlled expenses that we've done this year.
Is there room for further savings within that category?
I'm sorry?
Is there room for further savings within the discretionary category?
There could be, yes. There could be. Just as another note, before the frozen positions, actually, thank you. We have approximately 890 positions that we have frozen. Not all of those are filled. Many of them are vacant. But we have frozen those positions, and that's just to give you an order of magnitude on that size. You can go to the next one. This chart actually is now broken up into two areas. It has personnel at the top, which goes through all the salary and wages, which is a predominant expense in our budget, and then non-personnel on the bottom. On the top, we look at actuals that we've incurred for 2007, 2008. We've included our approved budget for expenses, and also included our baseline budget when we started this process in the fall, and now have the last column actually is our current proposed budget. As you can see, the trend on the bottom, just for personnel, we have trended from year to year about a little bit over a 5% increase in salary or personnel expenses. Those are primarily a function of step increases that we actually are committed to take. And just to give you an order of magnitude on salaries, about over 80% of our labor costs that you see here are contractually committed. So the only leverage that we have to manage our labor costs would be vacancies, attrition, things like that. Yes.
Mr. McCain.
On the paratransit number, you have proposed $79 million. How did we project that number? How did we determine that's what the number would be?
That number is... the number is based upon the ridership numbers that we're seeing on paratransit, as well as the expenses. We primarily use one vendor for the paratransit service, and that's a contractual number based upon a lot of different variables, but primarily on ridership.
We experienced a 15% increase in ridership this year, and in fact, we project that the paratransit budget will come in about $8 million over budget. So the actual for 2009 rather, will be significantly higher in the $70 million, $71 million range. So that's really the new baseline that we're starting from. And we project increases in that ridership going into the new budget. That's how we arrive at the $79 million. It's an actual expense that we incurred this year. Was higher than budget, and what we project is ridership increases for next year.
And actually, those are an actuarial actually validates those numbers for us, and that's how they're developed.
I'd like to follow on that one. When you talk about the projected ridership increase or the increase that we've experienced, are we at all tracking how? If there has been any change in the rider use, for example, folks who have depended 100% on Metro Access and vary their use of Metro Access between the fixed system and Metro Access?
Yes, we've done some of those analyses, but we're going through in greater detail. As I mentioned to the board before, we've already contacted the American Public Transit Authority asking for peer review to do a deeper analysis of exactly what's happening here, and also to give us some recommendations on what certain impacts have been the changes to our policy. So we've done some of it, but we're going to do over the next month and a half a deeper analysis of exactly what's happening.
Okay, and would we have that analysis in front of us in time to make some decisions on our budget?
Yes.
That number remain the same, or is that our projections?
We're scheduled actually to have a very in-depth review on this in the March FAO committee.
Keep in mind that as you're asking us to go to public hearing for service changes, we're going to be very loath to do that when we don't know some of the answers associated with some of these issues, because you would go with a lower number if there's some savings available and a higher number if they're not. So the earlier we can get some good indicators of these things, the more comfortable we'll be dealing with issues such as service reductions. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask a question about the difference between page 3 and 4. As close as I can tell, the only difference really is you've added in your projection for end of year this year.
Yes, that's correct. Both charts are similar with that exception. And if you want to go to page 4, we can certainly do that.
Well, what would be helpful, at least for me, I don't know about everybody else, I'll call on Mr. Albert in a minute, would be to go through these line by line and do a comparison of the approved 09 budget, and we can look back at 08 and 07. This is a good chart. What your year-end forecast is, mm-hmm. and what you're now proposing. So it's the third column, the fifth column, and the seventh column.
Mm-hmm.
And just say, okay, what is it that's going on, and why is it the way that each number goes? Because that gives us our best bet as for our best basis for saying, does this number look high or low?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Albert.
I'll hold my question.
Okay. So if you could go through that line by line, that would be helpful.
Sure. So on page 4, if you look at salary and wages, the year-to-date actuals are in line with our spending, which is $304 million. We anticipate the year-end forecast to be $605 million for salaries and wages. You want to compare this number to our proposed budget. Is that correct?
Correct, the 653.
Okay. So if you looked at the year-end forecast of 605 to the 653, that would appear to be an increase of $50 million in salary and wages. That increase is due to a couple of different things. As I said, 80% of these costs are committed, contractual. So we are committed to the current step increases that are dictated by our contracts, and those would reflect in that increase in number.
Mr. Chair, contracts can't hold it any longer. So you've said twice that the savings that in salaries and wages does not represent any, these are not your words, but does not represent any savings from contracts you currently have with the unions.
That's correct.
So are there plans to negotiate or renegotiate current contracts so that you could achieve some savings, further savings within the salary and wages line?
Well, at this point, we can't. That would be another executive session discussion, I believe. We're in arbitration currently with one of our unions.
Mr. Albert, actually, this probably is something that we do need to explore. We are currently in arbitration with our largest union, and the increase that will occur is at this point unknown. But what would be very helpful to all of us would be what is assumed in this budget that causes this number to be where it is. And that's not something we want to discuss in open session, but perhaps we can have a scheduled executive session where we can talk about that, because that is essentially what our labor negotiation strategy is. I would note that this is a savings of $46 million, which is about 450 people out of your 800. Is that the funded positions versus the non-funded positions out of your 800?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Your savings here are $46 million.
Yes, that's correct.
That's roughly 450 people. You're talking about almost 900 people.
Mm-hmm.
So are you saying that half of the positions are funded in this fiscal year and that's the maximum savings you can get out of it? Or is part of the reduction in staff that you're projecting associated with service that we've not made decisions on yet?
Actually, it's more about a little over 300 positions that we're talking about, and the balance of that is probably on average pay and step increases that we are committed to. Out of the over 300 positions, a little over 34% of those are filled positions, and the balance are unfilled positions. And they cut across mostly in non-service related type of positions,
so
non-operational.
How many of the non-filled positions were in fact funded? In other words, how many of them are in the 09 budget?
All of the 300, all of the unfunded, all of the positions that are vacant are funded in this particular budget.
No lapse? Normally have a lapse. Normally not all of your positions are funded.
So there is a 5% lapse that we use for budget purposes?
5%. About 4%.
4% out of the total.
Yes.
10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Which is 40 positions? 440 positions. So.
Did I get that right?
Yes.
No.
Hmm?
400, right.
Okay. So how many of those positions, I mean, if you have 400 lapse positions,
mm-hmm.
right, you have 400 lapse positions and 300 filled that you have cut here, mm-hmm. that's 700 total. So you're not going to make much savings out of the remainder unless you continue your lapse at 4%. Is that what you're doing?
I think actually the way, let me try to see if I can clarify these numbers. We have 891 positions,
right.
Which are non-operational and non-operational. Let's
that clarify. You're talking about.
That we're talking about. Of those, there are 313 positions which are non-operational, and there's another 578 positions which are operational. That's how we've classified the funded positions.
Out of that total?
Out of that total.
But are they, I'm still not
yes.
clear on what's funded and what isn't funded, and a certain number of positions are never funded, right? 400 positions are never funded in the budget.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's what a lapse position is.
Right, your definition of it, of 400 positions, that's not how we looked at it. We just take a certain percentage of the overall budget and make certain assumptions. And I think you took that amount and equated it to 400 positions.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do have the actual headcount. This here is just the administrative reduction. I'm going to make that clear. This is not the 800 and some positions. This
right.
is the 300 and odd positions that we're looking at eliminating in this upcoming budget. And these are the savings that are related only to that number. As far as the lapse position, and we go in, the proposed budget includes 4% again. We do that every year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's already taken into account when we develop the budget from the beginning. This amount is up and above that amount.
Yeah, it just gives us an additional flexibility because there is a lapse which counts for the equivalence of positions.
Yes.
And the timing of filling them. And if you have a freeze on, in fact, your lapse grows.
Well,
the size of the actual.
And I think we can get you more information because it's not just the lapse, but it's also we have, people who are attrition and people
right.
who we lose through attrition. And we can actually look at the trend of what we do over the last couple of years to figure out what those attrition rates have become and match that up with what our lapse assumptions are in the budget.
One of the things Mr. Cato said that's very important is what you have included in these numbers so far, your 40-some-odd million, is the administrative end, not the service end, that
mm-hmm.
is yet to come.
That's correct.
Associated
yes.
with any service reductions we may decide we need to make.
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman, quick question.
Mr. Brown.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I question about how do raises work? Are they done automatically through seniority? Is there some other kind of trigger? Are they being frozen? Or how is that part?
The under the labor commitments, they happen automatically through a series of step increases, and they're dictated by each contract. So they happen. In terms of non-represented positions, management has control over those.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Okay. Okay. So a helpful way to look at this, actually, this chart, if I it might be to actually add salary and wages and the overtime. To the extent that we look at those together, we broke them out here in order to see what the trend on the overtime was. But I think if we lump them together, it might actually give us a better view of the comparison that you're looking for. So, for example, on the year-end forecast for 2009, if you add salary and wages of 605 to the overtime of 67, you get $672 million. And you compare that to the proposed budget of 653 and $27 million, which you get to 680. So when you look at that comparison of the $672 million for the year-end forecast of 2009 versus the proposed budget of $680 million, the growth there is very nominal. And that's, I think, how we should be looking at it, because the overtime is actually scheduled overtime that we are required to actually implement in order to get service done. It's not necessarily a controllable expense. What is controllable is the unscheduled overtime that management actually can manage through supervision. If you go further and look at health insurance, you can see that the health insurance is on track, obviously growing incrementally, given the expenses that are happening in the health insurance, as well as the significant change if you look at the line underneath it, which is pension. And those are the two biggest changes that we see when we look at forecast budgeted 2009 to the proposed budget.
Let me go back to the health insurance. Mm-hmm. You're projecting something that's highly unusual, which is a number for next year which is less than the projection for end of year this year.
Yes, it's.
Are you going to do that?
Well, it's a function
of number of people.
It's a function of a reduced number of people. That's correct.
So this is the staffing level only.
That's correct.
Do you have a breakout of how much you think health insurance is going up behind that set of numbers?
It's health insurance costs are going up about 8% mm-hmm. a year. So it's being offset. You're correct with the reduction in staff.
And I guess on the pension, we see a whopping increase, which we have explained before as something that's associated with the investment of the funds that are in the trust.
Yes.
That clearly, that whopping increase is actuarially determined, correct?
It's determined by our actuarials who review it once a year. What you're seeing here, we're not alone in this $44 million pension loss. Everyone has the same problem. Everyone is addressing it differently. Currently, now we've budgeted what our actuarials have indicated what our losses are.
But it is possible to change those actuarial assumptions, right?
As I indicated in prior last month's meeting, we are looking at potentially amortizing on a longer period in order to minimize the impact. But we haven't made a determination on that.
But it sounds like that's something we need to discuss in executive session as well, because that can relate to the current arbitration.
That's correct.
So that's another area that we need to explore, probably should not be exploring right here.
That's correct.
Okay.
So overall, if you look actually just for personnel at the bottom, where you can see the 2008, 5.2%, 5.6%, and then you jump to a whopping 10.7%, it's primarily a function of the health and pension costs. If you normalize, actually, for the pension and health costs in those current years for 2010, you would actually see an increase of labor costs of only 4.5%. And I think that that's a significant message here. If you then move down to non-personal expense, which
before
are maybe
that, any questions? Other questions on personnel? I have one more. That's just note that in health insurance, where you have an 8% increase due to the staffing reductions, you actually come in at a lower number. Whereas in other fringes, you come in at an increase over the projected end of year, which implies a higher than 8% increase.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? What's growing?
Is it workers' comp? Rick tells me it's workers' comp. Workers' comp is actually growing, and workers' comp is, does it include the third-party claims?
No, that's on a different line, but it's all based on repopulating the reserve fund to get it up to a steady state level.
Okay.
Okay, so this gets us back to the discussion we had a year ago on workers' comp and the fact that workers' comp, in terms of raising the amount, ought to actually not be going up as much because we now have a major safety program that unfortunately we were going to celebrate very nicely at the end of this month, and we won't, but we'll be able to. But we should be seeing some savings.
I think what
we should be going down, not up.
We are seeing incidents going down, and that is clear. We've reported on that actually in these committees. What we are seeing, the change, is that the dollar amount of the incident or the claim has gotten bigger.
That's insurance. Is the same thing happening in workers' comp?
Yes, on the workers' comp side, the reserve in prior presentations to this board, we looked at what we were setting aside to make future payments, and we brought in a firm to look at that amount to determine if it would be sufficient in the future, and we found out that the budget was not sufficient on the reserve. The part of this number is the annual amount that we have to set aside for future claims or for workers' compensation. It's not an actual expense that occurred as a result of an injury in this budget year.
It would be helpful for us to see what the trend has been, first of all, and what we've been putting into the reserve and how big the reserve is. Second of all, what the accident rate and the dollar cost payout were, as opposed to the amount going in. So we have a chance to look at that and say, does that seem like a reasonable amount of money?
Okay.
The other issue that somewhere is hidden here is the one that we dealt with last year, and that is the retiree health insurance. Is there a number in here for that?
We do, and we show that later on. We can talk about it, but we have reserved for that.
Okay, that's one that I think is a policy thing. This is part of the
on the non-personnel side. Again, I think we talked about the paratransit, which we will come back with some further discussion in March. Other purchase services. For year-to-date actuals, we're on track to actually come in under budget, and that's a function of some of the controlled expenses that we're doing this year. We actually see a bit of an increase on other purchase services. Actually, if you go... this might be helpful because when we go through the detail, which we're going through now, if we move right to page 9, we can get through some of the detail, and we can refer back to page 4 to see the overall chart. But I think we're starting to get into the detail of the non-personal expense. So what we've done here on page 4, where we looked at other purchase services, which we've budgeted for is $80 million, and what we've broken out is the percentages of where we actually spend those dollars. For example, contract maintenance, which is the predominant amount of the dollars that we expend on this, these are actually non-transit-related type of expenses. They're outsourced routine maintenance of escalators, snow removal, landscaping, maintenance contracts on equipment. Any of the core assets that are station and transit-related are not in this number. These are these contracts that we have. Some of IT contracts are in here. Desktop computers, assets such as that.
What would be very helpful to me, I presume the other members, is the percentages don't tell me very much. It just tells me, we have some fraction of the total of this. But the same kind of information that you presented in the front, what's the budget for this year? What is your projection by end of year? What are you proposing for this budget after all the cuts? So we have some idea as to how these things are changing. Contract maintenance may be 40%, but it may have just gone up 50%. And we would say, we ought to look at that.
Okay.
That's not apparent from what you give us.
So would you like to see the line item detail from 2007, 2008 to current on each one of these?
What would be helpful to me, and anybody else may want to comment on it, would be the same items that you showed here, but just broken out with those three columns, the approved 09, the end of year forecast, and projected or proposed budget.
Okay.
So that you can look at those through. If you want to give us the 07, 08, that's always helpful because
professional services, which is 20, makes up 21%.
Could you give me a little sense of what's the 12% transaction fee?
Those are actually, the transaction fees are related to our debit credit card transactions that we have in our system. And actually, those debit and credit cards are, you know, bank card or Visa that we pay to. The volume has gone up significantly, which is a good thing. People are using less cash and using more of their bank cards. But as a result of that, our transaction expenses have gone up a bit.
Yeah. How much do you have any ideas of what percentage of our purchases on debit credit cards versus
yes. I don't have. I do have it, actually. We were actually going to talk about it. We actually looked at this because we were looking at, as a result of elimination of paper transfers, trying to understand the trend of people using yeah, I'll have to get back to you. Actually, I have, what I have is the trend between from August to now in terms of cash versus smart card usage. But I don't have it broken up into debit credit, but we can get that to you. The trend is going down. The trend of cash versus smart trip usage. So if I look at cash in August, just based on a month, 25% of those transactions were cash related. If I look at as of today or January, that number's gone down to almost 19%. And the smart trip usage has gone up. Smart trip usage in August was 15.8%. In January now it's almost 26%.
The question now is that still how much is debit credit?
How much is debit credit? And we can get you that information.
How are people loading the smart trip card?
Right. So on professional and technical, this is mostly our actuarials, our auditors that we actually contract with, as well as outsourcing other types of work, some of our outsourcing contracts related to legal matters. The parking, management fee and parking contract, that's actually the contract that we have currently with LAS, where we actually have people at each one of these stations, ensuring that people can exit the station if they do not have smart card cards. Temps is just that, office temps that we use, temporary services on any given occasion. Transaction fees we discussed, and then mandatory training is required safety training, hazardous material training, EEO training that we require to implement. Materials and supplies, which is about $73 million of the budget. $73 million of the budget is made up of the areas that you see here. Most of these items are not considered capitalized expenses, and as a result, we fund them with operating dollars. They're things like brakes, drums, small dollar amounts of parts that we purchase on a continual basis to maintain and supply our equipment. We are looking at actually developing a campaign program which could currently allow us to capitalize that equipment underneath a campaign of maintenance of overhaul or maintenance of equipment. And as a result, we may be able to reduce some of the operating costs that we see here. Of course, we would be funding that with capital dollars. So.
We already were doing some of that, but I guess not to the limit that the FDA allows.
We're looking to explore it further. We are doing it currently, yes.
Are we below the limit that FDA allows?
FDA actually allows currently up to the total dollars of all our maintenance. There used to be, I think it was a 20% cap, and that has been removed. So we're taking
so
in.
Could arbitrarily increase it, but we do it at the cost of reducing our capital program.
Right.
Exactly correct. Yes.
So currently, we're
currently just under $25 million a year that comes in as an expense reimbursement in the Army.
Second issue, not everybody is familiar with the fact that.
That was particularly the significant stimulus program that supposed one in fact to stabilize capital in the
It might not meet the litmus test of creating jobs because they would be asset purchases to some extent, but.
Which it might do. Because my.
And the difficulty, the big difficulty is that the way that our books work, we charge this account only when you draw something from the inventory, not when you put it in. So buying it doesn't cost anything. It doesn't get the budget. It doesn't get the budget. It doesn't draw it out. One of the things that is happening right now, and you probably need to pay attention to relative to this line item, is that the Inspector General is doing a review of all of our supplies and all of our equipment to see whether our inventory is too high. Are properly getting rid of the items out of the inventory and those excess are not usable. And, that would then hit the budget. That would be a cost if we had to do that. So it's an item that we need to pay attention to. And that probably would not be eligible for any of this.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, our procurement is working on better ways to do supply chain management as a result of that. So we should seek some improvement on that. For next year, the year, and the future. If you go back to page 4, apologize, but just look at the trend of materials and supplies, you can see that from the actual from 2007 to 2008, and then currently, we're proposing somewhat of a bit of a reduction on materials and supplies in order to maintain some cost efficiencies. The next line you look at, we're looking at is actually fuel and propulsion power. To some extent, these are a bit of uncontrolled expenses. But we do, as you know, we have a clear hedge program in place to protect ourselves in terms of diesel fluctuations. But just to give you a sense of the $116 million that we actually are proposing to spend on fuel, it's primarily propulsion power, about 542 million kilowatt hours. We actually currently have long-term contracts that we have with Maryland and Virginia to purchase on a retail basis this this power. And currently it's at 5 cents per kilowatt hour, increasing to 10 cents in December. So we've seen some increase in propulsion power. As these contracts expire, and we have multiple contracts at different periods of time, but as they expire towards the end of this year, we are actually looking to purchase power in on a wholesale basis, and our group is actually exploring how to do that. We have worked with the D.C. government and some of the regions, but there is an effort to actually purchase better contract pricing for electricity, but we actually are looking to do more wholesale purchasing. And actually, that program is hoping to be in place by next year.
Is that assumed to be in here?
It's assumed to be in here, yes.
It's assumed you're already getting that rate.
That's correct. The other component of this is diesel. We use about 1 million gallons of diesel a month. And we actually have currently hedged our fuel, or half of our fuel for next year, at about $2, a little less than $2.70 a gallon. When prices started to drop below $3, we took advantage of that and forward hedged the market. We have the balance of our fuel, which we have not hedged, and we are just waiting because prices are dropping. And if we do place a hedge to protect our budget, we'll probably place it somewhere below $2 a gallon.
Can you even do a hedge in the current market?
Excuse me?
Can you even do a hedge in the current market?
Yes. You can.
You
can do diesel
swap. It's
we're waiting to see if they calm down. And we actually the hedge that we put in place was in the middle of the economic crisis. It was back in October, and we were able to place the swap. So.
And then utilities, which is separate from fuel compulsion. Utilities is primarily electricity for this building, all of our facilities, electric and gas and water and phone and that sort of thing. So we have about a $44 million. And that is increased from year to year. And it's really a function of just increased prices in electricity. We have not explored any derivative contracts with utilities. We have not entered into that arena. It might be a little tricky, but we are looking at it to cover our base. Third-party contribution, miscellaneous expenses, $53 million. These are all casualty and liability. As you know, we are self-insured to $5 million deductible. These are third-party claims as well as WMATA employee claims.
Can we get the same information for this if you do the workers' comp so we can see?
What went into the reserve?
Year. Yes. What went into the reserve each year, how the reserve grew or dropped, and what our actual payouts were not in the budget.
Okay. On the preventative maintenance credit, this actually is a...
This is another report.
In fact, that was a question that was asked us a little bit earlier. We have reduced the percentage of claim, but we have an increase in the cost that we're budgeting for two reasons. The reserves were determined to be too low based upon an analysis of an outside review. So we have increased standpoint additional dollars to build up the reserve for future expenses. Second is claims, but the
reflects actually the this is actually where the money goes. So the 12% reflects the reduction that we're taking in administration. What it says actually is that 88 cents of every dollar goes into the operation of transit, and 12% is the administrative. We've looked at comparing ourselves and doing some benchmarking with other properties. However, everyone has a very different methodology of capturing administrative. As you see, we have some administrative in our bus and rail, but we're actually identifying them in bus and rail. So we're looking to Chicago and Boston, who look similar to us, to try to see if we can follow some benchmarking and best practices on that. If we go back to page 12, we actually now have a culmination of looking at our baseline budget as well as what our budget reductions are, and you can see where those reductions are being taken in dollars. So mostly in operations, we have reductions in administrative offices, in finance, and then in independent offices. These are the administrative 313 positions that we're eliminating, and these are the dollars that are associated with those. The other cuts on the bottom reflect payroll adjustments. This is where we actually are recommending funding the health benefits for retirees, which is the $5 million that we're requesting the board to review as a policy issue on reserves. This has come up in our, as you know, in our audited financial statements for last year. It was brought up by our outside auditors as a recommendation that we start a program to fund that. And then we have the $2 million of obsolete inventory, which we do on a yearly basis.
I would note again that, and I brought this up earlier, that the retiree health funding is an item that is a policy item that we certainly decided the other direction a year ago, and it's an area where we need to explore it on a policy basis as a board. One more time. Does
that in your presentation, or do you want to go through your appendix?
I just have two pages on the appendix that they're very simple pages, and because we're having the recommending the cuts of the 313 positions, I wanted to give you a sense of where they were occurring, primarily in operations and then primarily in administrative. And Gerald Francis is here to talk about the one page in the operations reductions and how that will affect operations.
Thank you, Karen. Obviously, when you're going through the three reduction, it gave us a chance to sit back and take a look at how we do our business now. And what it does is it gave us an opportunity to create a different business model. When we were looking at the reductions and the entry stages of both the bus and the rail reorganization, has led us to take a step back and kind of plan how we do our business from this point on, how we do our preventative maintenance in the rail department, how we plan our special event services to come out, as well as our bus operation. We've consolidated some of the responsibilities, which increased the, what I call, the span of control oversight from our supervisory level. Right now, we have probably 20 to 25 operators per supervisor, and that gives them a little bit better contact with the street supervisors on bus and the supervisors on rail as well. Better interaction with the operators. Also, taking a look at our business processes, too, on exactly how we do business on a day-to-day basis. We've seen some success on that right now that's come up with looking at our overtime. It's one of the items that we looked at, as Carol mentioned before, the unscheduled overtime. We're making progress in that area right now. In the last couple of months, we've shown that by getting out in front and planning a little bit better, then we can reduce the overtime costs as well. On our non-personnel budget, with the exception of the propulsion, as Carol mentioned earlier, but not added any in inflation to any non-personnel accounts, so basically will remain flat in FY09.
Okay. And then on the administrative side, which is mostly IT, planning, and workforce, HR, we have some reductions in that area as well.
Okay, I'll just share a little bit of what we've done on the administrative side of the house. The first one is that we have held the safety program harmless, and actually want to look to see if we can find ways to invest and continue to invest in our safety program to enhance our work in that area. The major takeaway on the administrative side, we're looking to see if our investments in IT over the last couple of years will start to yield some efficiency results. Increasing our span of control in HR by the improvements, using the improvements that people saw, how to leverage our staff better, get more coverage from fewer people. Doing the same thing in our planning, our function in terms of the scheduling and the planning service function, using Japanese and other planning software to get some efficiency from that area. A pretty severe or large increase in consulting and training expenses. In IT, as it relates to some of our HR services, we have to look to use internal staff to provide those functions versus going to outside staff to do that. And then the last piece, we are doing a bit of internal efficiency restructuring, working with operations to move the scheduling function closer to the people that provide the service, so we have a better connection between the service that we plan and schedule and the people that actually deliver the service. So it's actually a net, at a high level, a net at zero reduction, but we anticipate that the operations side will be able to find some efficiencies in that group once it's a little bit closer to the people that deliver the service.
Can I ask whether that's, are you transferring all of the operational plan or just the scheduling portion of operational plan?
At this point, we're looking at just the scheduling function. We're looking to reconfigure the service delivery, I mean, service planning piece within planning, become a little bit more robust and look at services. I think I've heard the board say on many occasions, looking for places where we don't have service but we need service. That group is tasked with really developing those type of service programs.
It's got to be about the 10th time in the last 20 years that that's happened. This goes back and forth. Here. Any questions?
Yes. Does legal services fall in this bus, or where does it fall?
No, legal services does not fall in here. It's actually categorized in the prior chart as an independent entity.
Do we get a sense of what the budget for legal services
Yes.
Received for FY10, and if there are any savings you're projecting in that category?
We actually do have that level of detail on our legal services. Just to give you a sense, we have probably about a $4.5 million budget on personnel for legal services, and then in terms of
it's all in-house.
It's all in-house staff, and then we have a certain amount of about $1 million in outside counsel services that we currently use as well. In the council budget now, we actually have about $11 million, but that's claims. So we're actually, you know, doesn't have a direct relationship to council's budget. And as a result, next year, we're moving that claims reserve out of council's budget and moving it into the treasury area, where it's risk management will be managing that claims area. So, there are savings that are projected in that budget. We're looking to reduce positions in the council's area as well as reducing our contract expenses in there. I don't have those specific numbers, but we can get them to you.
Mr. McKay?
The way we've done it historically, we've held the training budget within the IT department and allowed the other departments to basically use from that in a prioritized manner. Going forward, the departments themselves will need to fund the training that they will need from that IT group. So they have to look within themselves and then fund the training they'll need to be able to implement the program. So it'll be funded, but it will have to come from the person that's going to utilize the software.
Okay. I think that's an important distinction, because we don't want to advertise our increases in technology and have people walk away assuming that we're not going to train our people to do that.
Right.
So it's a little misleading, and I appreciate that clarification.
Real quick, back to the legal services question.
Yes.
Does WMATA have a lobbyists, and if they do they fall under the legal services budget item?
Yes, we do, and yes to both. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not under the budget of the council?
No.
Okay. Okay.
My budget neither is the labor, the firm that we use for labor relations, neither of those.
It's under government relations. I apologize.
Yeah, the money for the lobbyists are under government relations. The monies for the labor attorneys is under workforce services.
In terms of the IT cutbacks, how will this impact, if at all, the real-time bus arrival implementation?
Not at all. That program is actually funded from capital dollars and is still progressing, and we anticipate this summer still the targets actually have the service online. So that's still on track.
And on track for when?
This summer. I can give you more specifics by our after the board session in terms of the specific date, but it's this summer.
Okay. And what is the issue regarding the effectiveness of street supervisors, which we think is key to the improved bus operation? Are we taking away bus supervisors because of all the problems we've had with bus function and everything else is occurring?
First of all, we're restructuring the job. I'm changing it from a bus supervisor to a service manager, is it called? It's just a title change. But we're changing, it's a fundamental change in their authority. The supervisor of the past, and I mean the last few years, had no authority to make service changes or adjust in the field based upon what was happening in reality. The new supervisors will have full authority over the operators directly, as well as making changes in the field, versus just reporting back. They will be able to take an action to correct our services. That has required a whole a reorganization of our management structure to reduce levels of management. Having said that, we did have a plan
in this year's budget to increase those numbers more. And I believe that is part of the reduction, that we're not going to increase the numbers. But we will, yes.
That is part of the reduction, that we're not going to increase the numbers.
We're changing the function. We had an intent to have a significant increase in the numbers. If Joe, you're asking.
We're not reducing the numbers.
No.
If I could add one thing, Mr. Grand, one thing that we're doing is utilizing the street supervisor with the technology we now have in our bus operation control center. And in response to Peter's question, that's why the scheduling department is going to be so important, because we're trying to tie it all into one. So the street supervisor is on the street and sees, for example, bus bunching or needs to make changes, they coordinate that with the control center. And then if it's a long-term situations they have to deal with, that's where the scheduling department is going to come in and help us out too.
Mr. Giancola?
Yeah, I don't have an IT question, but I have a general comment. Back in early January, you identified a $176 million budget gap. Today, we've looked at your proposal for $81 million of that, which is less than half. So obviously, we're going to see, hopefully, the revenue projections. Maybe from increased ridership or other mechanisms, we're going to see the rest of it taken care of. I don't know at this point. Maybe you don't know. But I am concerned about that difference. And also, it's already been brought up in general comments this morning about we really need to challenge all of our assumptions and take a look at them and scrub them just as a general rule, recognizing that we've got to look at everything in the budget, including our assumptions, very carefully. So that's all I wanted to comment. I appreciate it.
Versus
my point of view, your briefing this morning. That's all I have.
I do want to get back to Mr. Giancola's comments in a second. Mr. Zimmer?
I want to follow up on Mr. Graham's question. Make sure I understand. The plan in the fiscal 2009 budget had been to expand in the area of, like, the street supervisors of the bus, that kind of thing. And Mr. Cato, were you saying that basically we're cutting back that expansion, we're not doing that expansion as part of our...
Yes.
Did we in fact never fill those? Are those among the things that have been frozen?
Yes, we froze those positions. We were going through the process. We had vacancies in the original number before the expansion. We trained those people. We replaced those. But as we started looking at the financial situation, we froze the expansion.
We were to do the expansion,
yes.
So you held it up there.
Yes.
We didn't actually fill them. We haven't. It's one of the things we haven't executed in the 2009 budget in view of the change in
the
situation. Which kind of still leaves the question, what Mr. Graham was saying, I think it's important. We have real concerns about the quality of bus service. This was one of the things that was going to be done to try and address that. We do seem to have had improvement in the performance of the services we've seen. I guess we were assuming some of that came from some management changes. It sounds like you are doing some things differently.
Yes.
The concern is, if it turns out we can do that without actually expanding the numbers of the positions, that's great. But we also want to have an idea. I think a part of what we're trying to learn through all this is which of these measures are impacting service in what ways. What ways are the customer likely to see them? You can decide you have to do it anyway if you don't have the money and you can't afford to do otherwise, but we want to have the funds, and if we're making cuts that are going to impact on the quality of the service, we want to make sure we identify that up front and can correctly assess that. So that's one of the things that's a little difficult for me to get through this. You talk about restructuring and leveling and all that kind of stuff in general speaking, but where is it that we're making choices to undo something we did last year? Where is it we're making choices that will make it harder for you or should expect to be harder for you to meet certain performance goals that we've got?
I understand. We need to break down the positions and the impact of those positions and the services. And we can bring that back to the meeting for the 12th.
If you think you can compensate for that by these other structural changes you're making, great.
I understand.
Particularly on the bus side, but of course, I assume the same applies for station managers and the rail system.
Yes.
Because we could presumably be coming back there, too.
Yes.
If I could just follow on what Mr. Zimmerman said, I think what's coming through here is At least I don't have enough of a sense of the impact on the quality of our service of what we're doing here. And I'm not sure, I'm not asking you to quantify that, but, you know, I'd like some kind of qualification on just what this would mean in terms of our performance, the cuts that are on the table at the present time. I mean, is there some way we can get around that issue?
Yes, I can break down the detail of the positions on the operating side of bus and rail and what the impacts, if any, what the trade-offs are for those positions, because we've taken different actions. One is a restructure that had a positive impact, as well as expanding the role and responsibilities of the supervisors. But there are some of those positions in there. We will show you the consequences of any reductions and any possible impact on services. And we can break that down for the February meeting.
Could we request that?
Is it premature to do that in light of the fact that you shouldn't have service cuts, which would ultimately give you a sense of that you may have to do some service, some realignment as well, and that may have some real effect on service beyond the staffing cuts, and there may be staffing cuts related to that?
I think it would be helpful to have the information, but then use that exactly as you say, relate that to service cuts and say how much of that really needs to be carried out. Getting back to that issue and what Mr. Giancola raised, Mr. Giancola mentioned $173 million. That's a subsidy number, right?
It's a net operating gap. So it consists of $150 million, which is the expense gap that we have here, plus an amount of revenue component. So it's a net number, actually.
And the total number is closer to 187, I thought, as a gap?
It's actually 176 million, which is what we had presented in January 8th.
As cost reductions?
As a net expense reduction. A component of that, as I said, is revenue, because if we're...
So 187 gets you up to... 187 number you did?
Yeah.
Right. That was the revenue difference?
Right, yes.
So, given where we are now, of your 176, mm-hmm. we have taken care of, if we were to accept all of these, 81 million.
That's correct. That's what we're proposing.
Okay, so we have a long way to go.
Yes, that's correct.
Part of that in terms of additional expense cuts, possibly. Part of that in looking at revenues and seeing whether there's anywhere that we can look at your assumptions about revenues and say it's a little bit more conservative than rural would be. And part of that and potential changes in service. The JCC last time was working on potential changes in service. Can you tell us what is going on there and what the current status is?
There was a series of meetings that occurred last week, 3 days, with Metro staff as well as the JCC. The outcome actually we'll be prepared to present at the February 12th meeting. And I believe that they had come up with a recommendation or proposal on areas that they would look to reduce service.
And are they targeting for service reductions basically $90 million?
They targeted a little bit over $80 million worth of service, yes.
A little bit over 80. Mm-hmm. So we still have a shortfall there. And things even if we accepted everything that they proposed, which seems unlikely, we still have to do some additional cuts here.
I will say that on the revenue projections, which we are looking to provide to you in March, we are anticipating that we may have some significant changes there as a result of some of the eliminations of paper transfers. We're unable to bring that to you now because we've only really had a 2-week view of how this has impacted our revenue, and it's not sufficient. So to some extent, we may have a revenue increase which could potentially cover the ultimate gap that we have.
Well, I think it's extremely useful to us if we can have some at least preliminary assessments of those issues so that we don't go out public hearing on service that we don't really have to reduce because there are in fact revenues to cover that. So that I think it would be useful by the time we get to February 12th to have a first cut. You know, this is what it's starting to look like, even though we may need to refine that at a later date.
Mm-hmm. We can do that.
We have some ideas to what it is we're dealing with. If I can remember all of the things that we talked about here, let me summarize what I think we're going to do on February 12th. And I ask all the other board members to please add in anything that I've forgotten or correct me if I say it wrong. We will look at revenues to the extent possible. We will look at whatever the JCC has come up with. We will have a quick look at the set of issues that we have raised here. Mr. Graham wanted to get some information on administrative staffing increases over the last 4 months and how those relate to the changes that are going on here. Mr. Graham and Mr. Zimmerman talked about the operation position breakdown and to what degree are we not doing things that we otherwise might have done that are potentially affecting our operations. We raised the need to have an executive session on the 12th of the committee to talk about assumptions associated with salaries and wages, and in particular with arbitration and what the potential results of the arbitration might be. We talked about the same thing relative to pensions. So those two would have to be in executive session, and the assumptions in the actuarial area of pensions. We asked for trend data on workers' comp so that we had some idea as to what was going into and out of the reserve and what has been happening over the last several years. We will have to revisit the issue of capitalizing materials and supplies, how that affects both our operating and capital budget. We also asked for trend data on insurance, third-party reserve, and what was happening there. And we also will have to look at things like the retiree health insurance reserve and whether that is something we want to fund at a point where we may also have to be cutting service. Are there things here that I missed?
New item that I just thought of. We incurred some additional expenses as a result of the inauguration. How are we capturing that in our budget? Are we making assumptions that we're going to be made whole?
We've actually included that in our forecast for this year. It'll impact this year. And we actually are seeking reimbursement, which we are in process of doing.
But the assumption that we've made is that we will get reimbursed?
That is the assumption.
But it will be an 09 issue, not a 10 issue.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for that helpful summary. Are we assuming, and should we assume, that there is no impact on any of these issues by the stimulus package for capital support? That there's no relationship between the funds that we're expecting in that regard with what we're struggling with today?
In the overall budget, and we had some discussions about this yesterday, as well as a little bit this morning, we are going to look at what the opportunities are in the stimulus package. We put together a list of projects, and to determine if there are operating expenses that should have been capitalized all the time, and could we capitalize those, I don't think it's going to be a significant number. But also, we want to have discussions around the region of the impact of the stimulus package to the dollars that come to Metro from our regional jurisdictions, and determine if there are any changes from that perspective, and that might impact the budget.
Well, the Washington Post has reported that it's something on the order of $350 million. Is that about accurate?
The last number I had was just 280 to 300 million, but there were changes to the stimulus package.
What did you say? 280?
280 to 300, but that was before the amendments took place. And so we really won't know until the Senate passes the stimulus package, and then in a conferee, they come up with a number. Then we'll know for sure, but we're planning for a number greater than that just in case.
But is there nothing we can do in terms of taking some of the edge off of this as a result of that?
Now, those are capital dollars.
And there's no relationship whatsoever
with that. Well, one opportunity that we have is, as we're going through the projects that we're going to submit, we are looking at projects that may have potential out-year reductions in operating costs and prioritize those as a way to see some out-year relief. So as we go through and come up with a list of projects, there may be things that we can invest in capital that we'll see over time a reduction in our operating costs, but that's going to take some time to actually realize that.
Yeah, so not for the FY10 budget.
Well, there are shaded areas. There are shaded areas for each
capital.
And that's what we're going to look at in a great deal of detail.
Can we get a further report on this? Well, we did already ask for the issue of are there areas that we can capitalize that we have not so far, and what the implications of that would be of our capital budget. Clearly, the stimulus money is intended to be 100% capital. To some degree, that may relieve some pressure on operating, but I think it's important for us to be consistent with what the Congress's intent is, and that is to spend this on capital projects that can be accomplished quickly.
And no relationship to paratransit, Metro Access.
I'm not quite sure.
Now being bought out of capital, so I don't think it would affect the paratransit budget itself.
Only the vehicles themselves have been purchased out of the capital budget, but there is no operating support for paratransit under any proposal.
There are still a couple of amendments that are floating around that would provide some operating relief that was consistent with language that was in the congressional bills last session. That has not been incorporated in the current vehicle at this point. But if that was to occur, then there would be some relief in those areas.
That would have to happen in the Senate and then go to Congress. So.
As an industry, we are requesting that. As an industry, we're trying to seek some flexibility of using some of the capital dollars for operating, but that's not in the House bill. That would have to be in the Senate bill.
I want to thank you all very much for getting us started on an extremely difficult process of trying to figure out how we can balance this budget given the difficulty that local jurisdictions have in coming up with resources to cover fiscal intent. We've done an excellent job in starting it. I look forward to the next step where on February 12th we get together and dig a little bit deeper in some of these areas where there is some potential that we can adjust the numbers a little bit.
I wanted to ask Mr. Chisholm to go through the summary of the numbers that we're going to deal with. We left before with the 176.
Yes. The 176 was the net expense reductions that we communicated on the January 8th. That was
again net expense. Is that subsidy or is that?
That is. Is it subsidy? I guess.
No, it's just 17.
Yeah. I believe it's.
Cost minus revenue.
It is subsidy. Yes, I'm sorry, because it's made up of.
Here's what I'd like to make clear.
Yes.
What part of this is revenue and what part is expenditure in actual numbers?
Yeah.
And what was what left out was to go back and find the 73 million or was it a different number?
Well, this is what we did. On January 8th, it is a subsidy number, the 176.
73 is the gap.
Yes. 103, that was made up of $103 million in administrative operational expenses and $73 million assumption of net reductions from service bus and train cuts, of which $14 million would be associated with a loss of revenue because of those reductions in service. That's how the 176 was made up. What we're presenting to you today is less than the $103 million that we had positioned of administrative cuts and looks more like now $81 million. And that's a good thing because we actually found room or errors when we did some further analysis. So we came down to $81 million in that expense reduction, which still leaves the $73 million, which the JCC and Metro staff worked on the last 3 days, of which $14 million was loss of revenue. And that's how it lays out.
Let me go back there and just clarify. You're saying that instead of 103, you can accomplish the same end with 81?
That's correct.
With the assumption of the 14.
When we went back to scrub in more detail versus what we presented in January 8th, we had, if you remember the numbers, we actually had a $22 million number of other because it was related to salaries and wages as a function of some of the agreements that we were looking at. And at that time, between that time and this time, we had more information.
And so we get a chance to scrub just a little bit more now. Thank you very much. Our working session is over.